Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
So, we've got a chance now. Really, it's open-ended in that respect. To either ask questions as follow-up to the presentations and or kind of broaden the theme out more generally about kind of investigating issues around kind of developing relationships over time and how you might kind of, I guess in some respects it relates to your sort of final point about diversifying income streams around kind of fundraising and development within institutions and how the experiences here are, but also your own as well, and whether they're kind of good practice that you want to share or just keep to yourself. So, we'll open it out now and see how it goes or not. Just kind of as soon as the journalist goes, oh, right, yeah, we've got one. So that's usually the toughest.
Hello, my name is Stephen O'Reilly. I'm from Evershed. So I was interested in Simon's talk and particularly the mention of social investment. How would you describe social investment, particularly in the higher education sector?
It's a good question. I think the first thing that should be said is these new forms of using funding, social investment and mission-related investment, the jury's very much still out on these, and it's by no means something that all foundations have adopted. And we don't actually do it at Wolfson, so I'm not speaking from first hand here. I think ESME, Fairbairn Foundation, are really the leaders in terms of social investment, and they've set aside a dedicated fund for that. My understanding is that it's where you use some of your funds available, your endowment, as opposed to your general grant making, and instead of investing it for returns, equities or whatever you might do, you actually invest it in an organisation that you see as providing social benefit to allow them to do more, to expand perhaps. As to the point in higher education, I'm afraid I'm not sure. To the best of my knowledge, ESME are not utilising it in that area. It's more the sort of grassroots level organisations, and so I'm going to have to say that I don't know of any examples of its application to the higher education sector, but it could be an interesting one to think through.
Okay, thank you very much. Any further comments? Yeah.
Hi, I'm Sarah Price from Cardiff University. My question is to Simon. I've been working as a fundraiser for the last 20 years, and I started out as a Trusts and Foundations fundraiser, and in that time my perception is that the personal relationship side between fundraisers and the big trusts has kind of grown further apart. 20 years ago you could pick up the phone and speak to somebody, and with the advent of technology it's much more pre-screening, if you like. So my question is that a result of the increased pressure on foundations and in the increased sort of professionalisation, the number of applications you're getting, so you just have to kind of keep people at arm's length, or is it for another reason?
Interesting.
It's a good question, and I think you probably put your finger on the answer there, that it is to a large extent a result of the increased pressure from a professionalised fundraising sector and the volume of requests and applications and being pulled in, sometimes wanting to wade in to other policy debates as well. The level of demand on time has shot up, I think. So I think it is a reaction to that, and it's an unfortunate reaction. There's a difficult tension there because, understandably, we want to retain as much of the funds as we can for grant making or the other ways that we're using that money rather than spending it on administration. And you perhaps have the same issues at universities trying to encourage your investment departments that actually it is good to invest in development departments and staff. But there's that tension, as I said, between keeping the money for the core purpose but having enough of a staff infrastructure that you can respond, because actually we all want to. And I was in on a panel a few weeks ago in Belfast talking about arts funding, as it happened, and there was a lovely speech given by one of my colleagues at another foundation talking about how we want relationships and we want to talk to applicants, and we absolutely do, but there is a pressure and it is a real tension and something that's quite hard for us at the moment to work out how to balance. And I know of one major foundation that have had a policy recently that they won't have any conversations pre-submission, which seems quite harsh, but I can understand why they did it. But I also understand they may be rethinking that now. So I think we're aware of the issues, and it, from my point of view, it does help the process if there are these offline conversations before a bid lands cold on your table, and especially when you're talking about the higher education sector from the point of view of Wolfson or other big funders. I think we would actually be somewhat taken aback if a major application landed on our desk and we had not had a single word to anyone in the development team there. So I think keep trying, and we're aware of the issue, and most of us do want to talk, and we'll try to when we can.
Thanks very much. Any final thoughts or comments, or just dying to get a cup of tea and move on? That,
could I possibly?
Of course, Adrian.
I was going to say, could I just? It will go in the notes, but can I give you the URL to go to for this review thing? Very simple. It's more partnership. That's just morepartnership.com/news/HEFCE review. HEFCE review. And I think I'm fairly sure there is a link on our front page, morepartnership.com, to the review. That's all lowercase. You can call it the Pearce Report. Officially, we're supposed to call it the HEFCE Review of Philanthropy in Higher Education. So that's why it's HEFCE Review. But rather like the Thomas Report, I suspect, if it has any life, it will end up known as the Pearce Report. But for now, morepartnership.com/news/HEFCE review. And I've had a couple of questions, actually. People saying, is this, you know, are we looking for institutional responses or are we looking for personal responses? I think it's probably fair to say that neither the review panel for whom we're doing this work or we anticipated, perhaps naively actually, that institutions would want to make, if you like, formal submissions, a little bit like, you know, you would as you know, I guess institutions are used to responding to things from, you know, that come out from HEFCE in a very formal fashion. We're really not looking for that at all. Although, if your institution wants to make a formal submission, then, you know, of course we would like to hear it. But to be honest, I think we are at least as interested in hearing what is in the heads of the people who are engaged with the business of both raising the money and giving it away in support of the development of higher education in this country. So personal views, yes, please. Institutional views, fine, but my guess is they will be somewhat more anodyne, frankly, because they will be formal, kind of somewhat carefully written policies, and actually we are as interested in visceral reactions I think to it all. So please do take part, encourage others to take part, the more the merrier.
Great.
Forgive me hijacking.
No, not at all. I, as I've mentioned before, I think there's lots of interest in the in both the kind of process of submissions, but actually more generally in what the report is going to say. So I think it's in many respects in our collective interest for that to be thoughtful, but also as kind of wide-ranging in that respect as possible. Well, let me just close the conference then by asking you to thank the speakers in the usual way. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.